Struggling to move your nonprofit forward? You've come to the right place. Welcome to the Nonprofit Architect, where we are giving you the actionable steps you need to launch and grow your nonprofit organization. Now, here's your host, Travis Johnson.
Hey, welcome to the show. I'm here today with Richard Ayoub of Project Angel Food. Richard, how are you today?
I'm good, Travis. How are you?
Man, I'm doing fabulous as always. Give us a little background about who you are, what you do, and about Project Angel Food.
So I'm Richard Ayoub, the executive director of Project Angel Food. I've been here for 5 years, started in 2015 as interim executive director. And 6 months later, after a nationwide search, they made me the permanent executive director. And Travis, just to show you the dynamics and the change that has taken place in those 5 years, is we went from a $3.8 million budget, and we inverted the numbers. This year, we're presenting to our board of directors an $8.3 million budget. So we've had really exponential growth in the last 5 years. And Project Angel Food is an organization that feeds critically ill people. And it's not just any food. It's medically tailored food geared for their illness.
That is wonderful. That's not a lot of, I don't hear anyone talking about that in general, let alone as a nonprofit. I mean, how did that get started? How did Angel Food, Project Angel Food get up and running?
We were founded in 1989 in response to the AIDS crisis. And it's extremely symbolic now because this is the 40th anniversary of the first recording of AIDS by the CDC. And our founder, Marianne Williamson, who you may remember, ran for the presidency as a Democrat. She wanted to make sure people dying of AIDS didn't die alone, didn't die hungry, and didn't die without love. And so she found a church in West Hollywood, got some volunteers to go into this makeshift kitchen, and they started cooking meals, and then other volunteers delivered the meals. And, you know, people will say that at times they would go to the church and they see this lady smoking cigarettes, waiting for her husband to finish his shift. And that lady was Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, being in Hollywood, Jeff definitely has a different feel than I'm in the middle of the country. I'm in Oklahoma City. And like when I get dressed up fairly nice, you know, AKA I put on a sport coat and go out, people wonder if I'm in charge or if I'm running whatever organization has been there just by putting a sport jacket. In other places, that would be considered very unclassy dress. I imagine it's very different in Los Angeles than it is here in Oklahoma City. But that is so cool. You have meals specifically tailored based on whatever need that they have. And my wife suffers from celiac disease, so she lives gluten-free. Her last checkup, doctor was very happy. There was 0.0 gluten in her body. She's like, wow, you've done a great job. She's like, well, it really hurts if I eat gluten. So it's very advantageous of me to follow that strict diet. And people are like, oh, gluten-free, that's so healthy. Fun fact, Cheetos are gluten-free. So gluten-free does not necessarily mean healthy.
But so are like tortilla chips.
Oh, absolutely. That's one of her favorite meals is a bag of tortilla chips. But that is so wonderful that you're able to make these handcrafted meals, local delivery, and you're really using food as medicine. Have you found that your delivery service and your products help really impact and increase the longevity of the people that you're serving?
Yeah, that's a really good point you're making. And you know it firsthand because of your wife. That if she eats the wrong food, she gets sick. If she eats the right food, she feels better. And it's better than actually taking medicine by eating the right ingredients. And so, for instance, congestive heart failure. That's what people get if they have a stroke or if they have some heart problems. If you have congestive heart failure, and if you stick to a very low-salt diet, and by low salt, I mean 2 grams of salt a day with all of your meals combined, snacks, soft drinks, whatever you have. Because as you know, soft drinks have sodium. So if you stick to that, you will be completely fine. But what happens is a doctor will tell you, go on low salt diet, and he won't tell you how to do it. No one knows how to do that. Our registered dietitians know how to do it, and our chefs know. And the registered dietitians and the chefs come together, and they create meals that are not only nutritious and help you feel better and get better, but look delicious and taste delicious. Because the last thing you want, and you probably know it from your wife, is if you are sick and nauseous and the food doesn't look delicious, you won't eat it. You know what I'm saying? The food needs to look tasty. So all of our food is extremely colorful because that helps whet your appetite. And we are seeing dramatic results. We're in the middle of a statewide pilot program here in the state of California with 5 other agencies to prove that our meals, our healthy meals, bring down healthcare costs. And so we're seeing, you know, a reduction in visits to the emergency room, reduction to visits to the hospital. And if they do go into the hospital, they stay there a shorter time. And all of this saves taxpayers money. Now, the thing that you and I care about more than cost savings is quality of life. Mm-hmm. If folks we talk to have a much better quality of life. I have this client, Candace, who was very overweight. She has 2 kids. She was going to the hospital every single month with congestive heart failure. And she told us, I don't want to be a burden on my family anymore. Every time I go, they have to take the day off work. They have to take me there. They have to watch me. They have to bring me back. I want to eat this food and only this food. And I want to stay out of the hospital. Well, she ate our food. She lost 65 pounds. She stayed out of the hospital for at least 10 months when she was going every single month. And she used to say that she would lay down and couldn't breathe. It felt like she was drowning. She was retaining so much water. Now she can breathe. She can walk from one side of the room to another side without having to catch her breath. And she used to use a walker, and now she says that she doesn't need the walker anymore.
See, that's fantastic. That's real world impact from the services that you're providing. Man, that has got to feel good. That has got to feel wonderful. Actually being able to have the money coming in, the right dietitians and chefs to make the food that's colorful, that's savory, that's what you want to eat, and then actually delivering the impact on your local community. That's got to feel fantastic.
It does. You and I were talking before we hit the record button that you love the work you do. You get to talk to people all over the country who are doing great things. And I love the work I do because I know just by showing up for work, I'm helping the lives of 2,300 people just by showing up. And I also know that I got up, I took a shower, I had breakfast, I got in my car, I went to work. During all that time, the folks we serve were just at home, waiting for someone to bring them their food because they are too sick to shop and cook for themselves. We're the person who goes to the grocery store. We're the person who makes the food, and we're the person who serves it to them. Because these people, if they have lung cancer, they're probably on oxygen. If they have kidney problems, they probably are going through dialysis. If they have cancer, they're doing radiation or chemotherapy. So everyone is at a point where they're really sick. If you can just think about your mother, when my mother was sick with cancer, with breast cancer, she was not cooking a thing. She was too sick to do it. And, you know, luckily she has 5 kids. And the food kept coming. A lot of our clients don't have that luxury. They don't have that family that can come to them every single day and make sure they're taken care of. And so we provide this free service, and we've been doing it for 32 years.
That is just phenomenal. That's a story that needs to be shared around the world. And it's something that places and people outside of Los Angeles need access to. Do you have partners in other areas that do the same things, or plans for expansion to get into different markets to help new people with the same problems?
Yes, there are 13 organizations across the country like ours. All of them were created in response to the AIDS crisis about 30 or so years ago. Most of them, you'll be interested to find out, Travis, were created by caring, loving women. Women who were caring and concerned about their dying brothers and dying, you know, friends who were gay and had AIDS. And so we all have evolved to help anyone with a critical illness. It's too much of a great gift to just keep confined to the HIV community. So people with heart disease, lung disease, diabetes, kidney failure, and all forms of cancer are helped. And so we have sister agencies in New York, Boston, Atlanta, Baltimore, DC, San Francisco, San Diego, Philadelphia, and Minnesota as well, Minneapolis.
That is so cool. I'm really happy with what you're doing and how you're doing it. But one of my biggest questions is, how do you go from $3.8 million to 5 years later having a budget of $8.3 million? I think that's definitely something that our fans want to figure out. What does that look like? How does that growth happen?
I knew that you would like that. I could tell that you're very results driven and you like that kind of turnaround. So I'm going to be honest. When I started at Project Angel Food, there were times when we would put together our budget and we would do a payroll. And I was worried because we had so many receivables. So we had a team that would call up our vendors and say, can we pay in payments? Can we pay you in 2 weeks? It was a really tough time. And I'm very proud to say we never had to reach out to the board of directors to say, can you help us make payroll? We made payroll, but it was scary. So from the point of my first visit to Project Angel Food to today, I've always thought this organization is working quietly and it's working effectively and it deserves better. It does not deserve to be literally going from paycheck to paycheck. It deserves to have more people know about it. And I have a TV news background. I used to work at TV news. I won a couple of Emmys for my work. And I also worked at the TV show Extra. So I said, I am going to leverage my media contacts and every opportunity I can get, I'm going to get media. And I'm going to use television, old school newspapers, community newspapers. This is really important for your viewers to know that, and your listeners, that community newspapers are extremely effective and they reach an audience that is older and compassionate and actually writes checks. You know, you and I do PayPal and Venmo and all this other stuff and credit cards. Very rarely do we write checks, but the people who read these community newspapers write checks and they give you money. And I will tell you a story about that. So we did that and we did internet and we did all of that and we did celebrities where we said, okay, when you're in Los Angeles and you have to cut through the clutter and you're competing with all of these other organizations, bring in whatever celebrities you can get. And so that was my mantra. Get attention, get celebrities, and tell your story every chance you can get. That's why I'm doing this podcast. I would go to house parties with 20 people, 30 people, 50, 100 people. The idea was to tell people, hey, Project Angel Food is still here. Project Angel Food is still doing great work. And guess what? We're serving so many of your friends and neighbors. They're the hidden people of your community. They're the people who can't get out of their house because they're too sick. but I know you care about them. So that's what we did.
That is awesome. Get attention. You talked about newspapers online, community newspapers. You talked about getting celebrities, and you're in LA, so you got to compete. So whomever you can get, and tell your story. It's a simple three-step process, but people forget. They think they wrongly ascribe an attribute from Field of Dreams. If you build it, they will come. That's not true. If you build it and people know about it, they'll come, but they got to know about it first. So they got to know who the heck you are and what you do. And I'm obviously a huge fan of podcasting and what that can do for somebody. Get celebrities. I love that you talk about that. I did an interview with Vincent James from Keep Music Alive, and he talks about how he gets celebrities to help stump for his cause. So definitely check out that interview and then tell your story. You've got to be able to tell the story that's going to make the impact. No one cares that there's this many people on the street or this many people not getting fed. But if you say a story about how Joe used to be in the Navy and then he contracted cancer and Joe can no longer go do this, that, and the other, they care about Joe. No one cares about a number. They care about a person telling the story, making the impact, show how you're making the impact and you're the best one to do it and you're going to get support. And that's it. The three steps took you from 3.8 to 8.3.
That's it. And I'll tell you, well, one of my biggest success was, it was with this community newspaper here in Los Angeles. So I joined Project Angel Food in November 2015. So Christmas was coming up. And, you know, we had vans that were 150,000 miles and they were on their last leg and we needed a new van. At that time, a van cost $40,000. Now it's $55,000 because we put refrigeration units on them and the whole thing. So I decided to write this press release, and I wrote it using a quote from our longest driver, Pablo. And the headline was, "All I want for Christmas is a new van." And it was a press release about how Project Angel Food has these vans. There's one has 150,000 miles on them. And we need a brand new van. And it's going to cost $40,000. And it just will cover all of Los Angeles. I sent it to this community newspaper. And they published it. They published their own version of it between Christmas and New Year's. I thought, oh my God, I missed the whole feel good Christmas season. So they published it. I was in Kansas during the holidays. And all of a sudden, on my cell phone, I get a phone call from this woman, Corky Hale, actually. She says, "Hi, this is Corky Hale. Richard, you don't know me, but I heard about your van, heard that you need it. Me and my husband are here. We've been married for more than 40 years, and we decided instead of spending money on our wedding anniversary, we're going to give you all the $40,000 you need for a new van." And that was the most beautiful gift I could ever ask for. She and her husband is Mike Stoller of the very famous songwriting team, Lieber and Stoller. And he wrote Stand By Me and a lot of Elvis Presley songs. He's a very famous songwriter. And they found out about us through that little community newspaper.
That is such a heartwarming story. You missed the Christmas season, you put in a community newspaper, and here you have a phone call all the way to Kansas and says, "Hey, we're not going to say yes to our big party. We're going to say yes to your needs." That is wonderful. That is so wonderful, Richard. What do you need and where can people find you, get a hold of you, send you that need?
Good. Thank you for asking. So as you probably know, there's a lot of organizations that deal with food insecurity. That means people who don't know where their next meal is coming from. We also deal with nutrition insecurity, which means people may have access to food, but may not have access to the right food and the right nutrition to keep them healthy. During COVID, a spotlight was put on organizations like ours. because we're doing such a critical need. And we all were thinking about food because we went to grocery stores and it was hard to get. Remember when we were running out of food in those first days? And there was no toilet paper and there was like these crazy things. And you try and get Lysol wipes, forget it. It was amazing and crazy. And so we were that person that gave this to all of our clients. And so during COVID, we went from serving 1,500 people a day to 2,300 people a day. So we're serving 800 more people than we did before. And we don't just serve someone for a day, a week, or a month. We serve them for as long as they need us. And all of those people still need us. But the donations have gone down because everyone thinks, oh, things are opening up. I don't have to wear my mask. COVID is over. We still have people who rely on us because, quite frankly, at Project Angel Food, every day is Thanksgiving. Every day we have to feed people. So your donation will be deeply appreciated. They can go to angelfood.org/donate. angelfood.org/donate.
That is fantastic. I didn't realize you serve 2,300 people each and every day.
That's a lot of people, and that equals 1 million meals a year. We used to cook, prepare, and deliver 650,000 meals. We just skyrocketed to a million in 2020, and that's why we have an $8.3 million budget. We got to keep those food costs. We hired extra chefs. We, you know, had to make some improvements in the kitchen. We used to have two blast chillers that flash freeze the food with all the flavor and nutrients and aroma, but no preservatives. Now we have four of them. We used to have two of these huge oversized tilting braisers, which are like big skillets. Now we have three of them. So we just have to do all these things to keep up with the demand.
You know, I have a hard time picturing this because I'm in the Navy, and on aircraft carrier, you've got 5,000 some people that you're cooking four meals a day for, or three and a snack, a midnight snack, midnight rations, mid-rats. And the amount of work that it takes, all self-contained, and the people come to you, but you've got to do 2,300 people and you have to go to them. That is quite the undertaking, yeah.
And delivery drivers who go there, and then we have volunteers. It's a massive project, and it takes a lot of coordination.
Absolutely, it does. What do you think is the biggest gap in the nonprofit world? What do you think is the biggest hole that people aren't being served?
First of all, with nonprofits, the biggest funding gap, if you want to know that, is people who give you money without expecting something in return. There are a lot of people who will say, oh, I'll pay $500 for an event, but I won't give you $500 without expecting anything in return. There's so many people who are event-driven donors because they like the social aspect of it. And so when you don't have events, it's challenging to get those donors to come forward. So you have to create a virtual event or you have to create something. It's important to build the major donors who do it for altruistic reasons because they believe so deeply in the cause. And I get it. I used to be one of those social donors who would love to go to these charity events, mingle, see the stars, have a dinner, and pay $500. So that's one of the biggest gaps. And what I tell people about, you know, what I do, and people say, it's incredible what you do. I tell them, everyone can do their own part. What I ask people to do is reach out to someone you know who is lonely. Reach out to that neighbor down the door, you know, down the hall who never can get out because they're older or because they're not feeling well. You know, make a phone call. Reach out to a friend. I have a friend who's 75 years old. I take her to lunch about once a month. It gives her a reason to get her hair done, to put on her makeup, to get out of her sweats and get dressed because she's going to see me. I ask people, adopt one person who you're going to be kind to and share the kindness. And this will have amazing ripple effects throughout this country.
I love it. And what a great note to end on. Richard, thank you so much for being our guest today. Everyone go check out angelfood.org. Connect with Richard on social media. Figure out how you can help, or if there's one of their partners in your area, whether it's New York, Boston, Baltimore, DC, Atlanta, San Francisco, San Diego, Philadelphia, or over in Minneapolis. Figure out where you can connect. Find someone to adopt and help spread kindness. Thanks so much, Richard.
Thank you, Travis.
You've been listening to The Nonprofit Architect. To listen to all our past shows, visit http://nonprofitarchitect.org. And be sure to subscribe, rate, and review our show. Thank you.